Support of Focus 580. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors offers pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors is pleased to support public radio in Central Illinois on behalf of its customers and business associates.
And good morning. Welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you listening. We're also pleased to have here back on the program once again Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He is here with us once a month. It's always on a Monday to talk about home maintenance issues. And if you have a question, maybe there's some problem, you're just not quite sure how to solve it, and you need some advice, you give us a call and he can help you out. And we already have a couple people here ready to go. Let me just give our telephone number in Champaign-Urbana, where we are, 333-9455. That's the number. We do also have a toll-free line, and if it would be a long-distance call for you, use the toll-free line and we'll pay for the call. 800-222-9455. Good to have you here once again.
Yeah, good to be back.
Appreciate it. We have some folks here ready to go, and we will do that starting off in St. Joe and line one. Hello.
Good morning, Hank. I hope you can explain some mysteries of plumbing. We live in a rural area. We have a septic tank. And the tank is about maybe 8 feet from the house. And it's probably about 2 feet lower than the toilet that's adjacent to it, close by. Mm-hmm. Last Wednesday, we had 4.5 inches of rain. And later that evening, the toilet suddenly started to fill up with clean water, and it nearly overflowed. So we took a pan and we drained it out, and to about the regular level of water, and then the water started flowing out of the toilet. And this is strange. So then a day or so later, we drained the bathtub, and when we drained the bathtub, the toilet simultaneously drained. So I just wondered if you could explain what's happening with the toilet, how that valve at the bottom works, and do we need to take any corrective action?
Well, first of all, there isn't a valve at the bottom of the toilet.
Okay, what is that?
It just goes right by gravity into the septic tank.
Oh, gravity, okay.
I suspect that what has happened is that you have a break in the line between the house and the tank. And therefore, when the water level in the soil went up, it backfed into that line. I've run into that one before. But somewhere along the line, the dirt settled or whatever it is, and the that tile between the house and the septic tank cracked. Oh. And when things saturated, and I wouldn't be surprised that the slope away from your house was not particularly good. Uh-huh. Remember, we're supposed to have 6 inches of fall in the first 10 feet away from the foundation all the way around the house. Uh-huh. And I have a feeling that the overflowing gutters, and I hope you do have gutters.
Yes.
Probably saturated this soil, and we ended up, it really should not back into the toilet that is higher. Somewhere along the line, I'm not quite sure how we're defying gravity here, but there should be nothing in the plumbing system as long as the plumbing vent is open. That's the stack that goes up through the roof. As long as that's going, we shouldn't have any pressure coming back that way that would be higher than the dirt outside.
Okay, so what would cause the tub to when the tub drains, the toilet simultaneously drains?
This is why I'm concerned as to whether, whether the venting system is working properly.
Yes. Okay, maybe it's clogged. Okay. So just the level in the toilet bowl is caused by what? What did you say it was? Gravity?
There's a trap in the toilet. And so it is filling up, and if that trap overflows, that controls the level. Now, if the trap can't overflow, whether there's water coming back from the septic tank or whether there's an airlock from a blocked vent so that it can't overflow, then the water level will rise in the toilet.
Hmm. Okay.
And the more you tell me about this, the more I'm really wondering whether the venting system is working properly.
Yeah. Okay. And how would I check that?
Very difficult. Run a plumber's snake through and make sure that everything is open. So we don't have
like
something.
The roof?
It may be necessary to go from the roof, or you can go from any crap that's in the house if you get out. Or there should be a clean-out plug in the basement or crawl space that goes out to the septic tank. You might check that and make sure that everything is open there.
Yeah. I did that this past weekend. Actually, I did find some blockage some debris there. So I did clean that out. Okay.
Well, that may have been a major source of your problem.
Okay. So you think the blockage? Okay, fine. Okay, thanks.
All right, very good. Well, I'll talk next with a caller in Mattoon. This is someone on our line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
How are you doing today?
Okay.
Our daughter and her husband just purchased and are revamping about a century-old farmhouse. And one of the things we've been doing is peeling wallpaper, and we went through a minimum of 4 layers of wallpaper. Most of it came off using steam was the best way to get it off, though some we also took off with the solution of downy fabric softener and water. And I'm wondering now, is there anything that we need to do to prepare those walls to paint? We were going to put a coat of sealer primer on there like Kills, and then put on just the finish coat, and I'm wondering if there's anything else we need to consider doing.
Just wash them, make sure that we get as much of the paste off as possible.
Okay, so just wash them before we paint them.
Wash them, let them dry thoroughly, and then paint them, and Kills is a good product to use for that purpose.
Alrighty, thank you.
Okay, line 2 next, someone on the campus. Hello.
Hi, Mr. Spies, this is another plumbing question. In our cellar, the stack is about 3 feet off the floor, and previous folks have sent the output from the washer to the sump, and then it was pumped into the backyard. I have connected it back to the sanitary sewer, which I understand is not good.
Well, on the contrary, the washing machine should be going to the sanitary sewer, but the output, the sump pump should not.
Okay.
There should be 2 separate systems.
All right. Right now, they're not. So here's my question. Because that stack is 3 feet off the floor, I have a little problem with gravity getting water over to the stack.
Usually the pump on the washing machine will be able to get it at least 4 feet up. If you hook up with a trap there, I think your machine should be able to pump it that high.
Well, how about 7 feet?
In that case, you need a sewage ejection pump.
Yikes. Okay, but in any case, that's out of code. Should we try to sell that house, we'll get nailed, right?
If it is inspected, the inspector should note it.
Okay.
But definitely, we don't really want to run the groundwater from the sump pump into the septic system, and we don't want to run the discharge from the washing machine out onto the ground. We want it to go into the septic system.
Okay. Now, this is municipal, so it's not a septic system. It's municipal water.
Well, whatever.
Okay.
They will be unhappy about running the sump pump into it also.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks for the call. So why is that?
Well, in case of heavy rains, the sewage treatment plant about floats out to sea.
Oh, I see. Okay. It just increased volume of water
that
would
right.
be going in there.
And,
okay.
Increasing what has to be disposed of in one form or another. And one of the limitations on development in Champaign-Urbana and surrounding communities, generally speaking, is the size of the treatment system.
Okay. And why is it that you don't want to take your wastewater from your washing machine and just put that out like you would the water from the sump?
A lot of bacteria there, and it'll probably kill the grass, and it'll probably stink. So that's definitely sanitary sewage.
All right. Let's go again. Well, here we've got somebody in Champaign. They're our next caller, and it's line 3. Hello.
Hello, my name is Michael, and
hi.
I've got a 40-foot-long sidewalk on the west side of my house, all along the front of the house. It's about 6 to 8 inches thick, about 4 feet wide, and it's sinking. The south side of it is about 8 inches down from where it was, and on the north side, it's 1 inch down.
Okay.
It's cracked in two places along those seam lines, you know, that they kind of put in it.
How old is the house?
It's 65 or so, 1965. So it's about 40 years old. It's a Thompson home, and it's rebarred to the concrete block in the foundation, or on the foundation of the house.
Now, is it settling on the, what direction is the house on? Is the house staying on the high side, or is it sloping back toward the house?
Well, I don't understand the question, but the house faces west, and the sinking is going, it's further, it's down further south than it is up north. So it's, is that answering your question?
Well, it could well be that some settlement has occurred in the backfill. I presume this is on a basement.
Yeah, it is a basement.
Okay. So when they dug the basement, then they had to backfill. And I'm a little surprised, since they have the thing rebarred in, that it would be sloping there. But you can re-level a sidewalk like that by mudjacking.
I talked to some mudjackers, and they came out and looked at it and said they wouldn't touch it.
Well, that sounds...
So what I'm thinking of doing is removing it, but I'm scared to go rent a jackhammer or something like that, because I'm afraid that if that's a rebar mesh under there, that all the vibration will pull the foundation block away.
Well, I don't know. My question is was there mesh in there, or did they actually put rebar into the block?
Well, there's. It looks like... there's holes in the concrete block, in the foundation block, and the rebar goes in there. What the rebar that I can see goes in there, and it looks like it's hooked into the cavity of the block, and then the rebar goes into the sidewalk.
Yeah, I would agree that that moving that would likely do something to the wall.
Yeah, I'm afraid that it's pulling as it settles, because it's gone down about 8 inches on the south side, and it's more firm on the north side. It's 40 feet long, so, you know, that's quite a slope there.
Is that against the foundation all the way?
Uh-huh. And it's pulling slightly away from the foundation the further it falls.
Yeah, I imagine it would, but... I still would suspect that it should be able to be mudjacked. There's a couple of mudjacking firms here in town.
Okay.
It seems to do a pretty good job.
Any recommendation of one?
Well, there's Ross Concrete Raising has been here longer than anybody else.
Okay.
And there's another outfit that moved into the area from, I believe, Decatur, called Howell Slab Lifters.
Okay. Well, I'll give them a call.
Okay. I don't know who you checked with, but Ross has been around for many years, and his father ran a similar business elsewhere, so
okay.
He's pretty experienced.
If they didn't want to do this, how could I just remove that sidewalk without getting a huge machine or something?
Afraid it's going to take a jackhammer.
Jackhammer?
Probably.
Okay.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Okay, thanks.
We got certainly time for other questions. This is our monthly program on home maintenance. Hank Spies is the guest from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's with us once a month, always on a Monday. We talk about these kinds of issues. If you got a problem and you don't quite know how to solve it, you can give us a call, and Hank will see if he can help you out. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Well, there are a couple of things that you said you wouldn't mind having a chance to mention, and why don't we do that? Here we have an opportunity. We don't have any calls.
Well, basically, I'd like to talk about operating your air conditioning, particularly in this kind of weather. Every once in a while, when we get this hot spell, we'll find a weather person saying, well, it's going to get cool enough tonight to open the windows. Unless the humidity is below 45%, do not open the window, because the main function of an air conditioner in this climate is dehumidification. And if you could see the water vapor coming in, it would be pouring in by the bucketful when you open that window. Generally speaking, I don't particularly like open windows. I don't think I've opened a window in my house in at least 5 years, and maybe 10. I turn on my air conditioner in April and off in October. And that's what I paid thousands of dollars for, was so that I did not have to live outside. And, but you will increase the operating cost tremendously by opening the window when the humidity is above 45% outdoors, because the water just comes in, and the next day the air conditioner spends all its effort pumping the water back out. Mm-hmm. So now you probably ought to check your air conditioner, see how well it's working. If you put a thermometer in the return air, leave it there for a few minutes while the system is running, then transfer it to the outlet closest to the furnace or wherever your air conditioner air handler is located, and see how much difference there is in temperature. If there's less than 8 degrees, there's something wrong with the system because it's not working properly. If it is more than, probably 12 to 15 degrees, we are not moving enough air through the system to transfer the heat efficiently. Still be cooling, but it won't be as efficient. I know some people want to go 20 degrees drop. Sorry, I don't think it is nearly as efficient that way. If you're getting, say, 20 degrees drop, this means we're not getting enough air. That can mean that the filter is partially blocked. It can mean that we have too many outlets closed, so we don't have enough air moving through the system. So you get far more greater efficiency when you're moving that kind of air. If you restrict it completely, you'll end up freezing the coil into a solid block of ice. And we found that more than once, too. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that you ought to concern. Now, the other thing is, if your house is on a crawl space, for heaven's sake, check and be sure that there is no ductwork disconnected or leaking heavily into the crawl space. Now, as home inspector, it's a lot more comfortable to inspect an air-conditioned crawl space, but it's a mighty expensive thing for you to do. And we've found places where ducts have come disconnected, humidifiers have fallen out of the ducts, whatever, and the crawl space was never intended to be heated and cooled.
All right. So no matter what time of year it is, the vents, if there are vents in there, you want them to be closed.
Yes.
And you want to make sure that if there is ductwork running through there, that it's not leaking either hot air or cold air
into the crawl space. Now, if you have water in the crawl space, which should not happen, we address the problem, but then you may want to open the vents. If you do not have water in the crawl space, the vents can be closed and insulated year-round. Okay. And your house will heat and cool better. So it's one of those things that we can be inadvertently adding to our utility bill by not checking once in a while.
Okay. And if in the crawl space you've got dirt in there,
and it must be covered with a layer of plastic, wall to wall, and preferably lapped up the foundation a few inches, because if you do get some water in there and there is nothing on the plastic holding it down and the water is under the plastic, it will float and will keep the moisture from being a problem in the house. I've been in one house that a friend of mine owns that you open the hole and you look and there is dust on top of the plastic. But you better be darn sure that there isn't 3 inches of water under it if you're going to jump into it. Yet, because the water is under the plastic, it never causes a problem.
Okay. All right. And just let me review now, if you want to check the efficiency of your air conditioning system, what you want to do is you want to take a thermometer and you want to put it in the warm air return first.
Yeah.
And then just let it sit there for a while and get a reading. And then take it and then put it in the duct that's putting out cold air that's the closest to the furnace that you can. So it ought, so theoretically, it ought to be the coldest air.
That's
has the least chance to warm up. And what you want to see is the difference. You want to see a drop of somewhere between 8 and 12 degrees?
12, 15 maybe, but certainly not any more than that.
All right. And otherwise, what you want to do, obviously, this time of year, as in the winter, you want to make sure that you're changing the filter often enough so that it's clean.
Now, there is one other little factor in here, and that is for the location of the outdoor unit. Look at the outdoor unit. Many times, builders tend to hide the outlets from clothes dryers behind the air conditioner, and this causes them to block with lint.
Mm-hmm.
Besides which, we have the outdoor unit is a condenser. It condenses the thing. If the clothes dryer is running, I don't care whether the air conditioner is running or not, it is not cooling because it will not, we're blasting it with warm air and it will not condense the refrigerant. As far as I'm concerned, the builder who hides the clothes dryer vent behind the air conditioner needs a course in physics.
Okay. Well, if you got questions about that or anything else, we're about midway through here. Our guest is Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service, and it's our monthly program on home maintenance, 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana, toll-free 800-222-9455. Urbana, up next, line number one. Hello.
Hi. I'm calling. I would like to ask Mr. Spies if he's familiar with a product in dealerships by the name of Permacrete.
Tell me a little bit more about it. I think
It's a kind of a coating that goes on, and it can cover for. Okay, here's the deal. We're in Southeast Urbana. We have cracks in the driveway and in the garage. And also the front sidewalk and the slab that is the porch, over the years, you know, they've settled. And so the slab now has sort of sunk on one side. So that and the front sidewalk are kind of tipped. And then, again, we've got another sidewalk in the back to a patio, the same thing. And what I was thinking is rather than having mudjackers come in, this Permacrete, they put this thick coating on over it, and then they can, of course, stain it. They can put a template over it, make it look like stone. And on the website of the company, it's like Perma-Crete, C-R-E-T-E. I mean, they look fantastic. I mean, and I was just wondering if you had any.
Well, now remember that those little lines that are drawn in the thing are expansion joints, and whether or not the product is any good, it probably will crack at those expansion joints because they are there because the concrete moves with changes in temperature. So you are not going to fill all those cracks. Now, Permacrete is a good solution if you have surface spalling in the.
Okay, I know what that is.
And so if you have surface spalling or if you want to put a texture or pattern on it, Permacrete is fine, but do not expect it to hold at joints or cracks that occurred because of expansion.
Okay, what about, for example, where it's like the sidewalk is just sort of tilted on one side because of the settling? Cover it and thicken it on one end to kind of make it more level?
It depends on how far off it is. If it's more than an inch, no.
Okay, all right.
Otherwise, you'll need some mud jacking to bring it back to where it was.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks. So the reason that you would do that is if you have pitting, essentially you have like little potholes in your sidewalk, that would take care of a problem like that.
Yes.
But you can't do that if what you're doing is extreme leveling because you've got
I would not trust it at more than an inch thick.
Okay. The other reasons for just doing something like this would be essentially it sounds like it's something you do for cosmetic reasons, just to make it look better.
Right.
And how thick generally do they go with this material then?
Oh, they go anything from an eighth of an inch to an inch.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But generally speaking, the inch stuff is just when you're leveling, not running a cosmetic fix. But we get a lot of surface spalling in some driveways. Usually this means that the original concrete contractor overcrawled it at the time that it was put in, and that will cause it. But let's face it, concrete moves, mm-hmm. and you've got to have some joints that will allow it to move without having it crack. That's why we score these nice straight lines across there, so that if it moves, it will crack at the weak point, which is the scored line.
Okay. All right. Let's go to some other callers here, and talk next with someone in Lovington, line number two. Hello.
Morning. Need your opinion on an air conditioner or heat pump air conditioner. I don't know whether it makes any difference or not, but I'm having trouble losing coolant. I don't know whether it's 134. I don't imagine it is, but keeps leaking out, and my service guy can't find it. Last time he put in something that he said was the equivalent of stop leak, and that lasted about 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Should I be looking for another technician on this?
Probably.
Okay. Well, he said something about some of the newer, it's a newer thing, and the newer ones, he said they're so low quality, they suspect they've got leaks all over the place in them. Of course, we got that from him, but...
If you have to reload the refrigerant more than once a year, you better get somebody finding the leak.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. We'll go next to the next caller, and that would be line number three in Urbana. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
My turn?
Yes.
I have an attic fan, and I have two little windows in the north, one in the north side and one in the south side of the house up in the attic. And there's a louvered screen in those windows, and they're open all year round.
Mm-hmm.
And I was up there, and the screens are just plugged with dirt. So I went up with a wire brush to try to clean them out, because I figured that's not good. There's not enough air coming through.
You're right.
And I couldn't budge the dirt with that wire brush. And so I want to know, how do I clean those things?
Well...
And I'm afraid to take soapy water up there, because I'll just make a big mess and it'll all run down and, you know.
Well, I would consider taking the screen out, taking it down and cleaning it.
Well, I don't know how to get it out. I think it's permanently installed.
Well, it may take a little, you may have to pull some staples or something of that sort, but I can't imagine what's in there that's plugged it that tight.
Well, it's the... Oh, you mean the screen itself?
Yes.
The way it's installed.
Well, I'm looking at what is plugging the screen. What are you collecting?
It's dirt. It's dirt from the air flowing into the window, and the attic fan pulls the air in and then out through the fan.
It must be an awfully fine screen.
Is it
like insect screen?
Well, it's like screen on your windows.
Yeah.
Is that insect?
Okay, yes. Usually we use about... 1/8 inch or 1/4 inch hardware cloth on those.
Oh.
So that it doesn't plug nearly as well. And yes, I agree, it will. But the only way you're ever going to get that is to remove it, take it down, clean it, and put it back.
Oh,
or
boy.
Else replace it with a coarser screen.
Yeah. Oh, boy. That's not something I'm looking forward to.
Sorry about that.
Me too. It hurts. Thank you.
All right. Let's go on to Champagne here. This is line number one. Hello.
Hello?
Yes.
I would like to ask what precaution I need to take in cleaning the crawl space, which I think had some mice infestation. There's some debris in the crawl space. Do we have any issues with hantavirus at all here, or is that just an internet scare? And
well, to a great extent, it's the internet scare. But generally speaking, if it's dusty down there, wear a face mask while you're down there cleaning. All wood products should be, we want the plastic clean. We want this plastic to go wall to wall, up the foundation a few inches all the way around. It does not have to be sealed. It can be lapped 6 or 8 inches. You don't have to tape it together. But basically, you can use a shop vac or something or other on a long hose, and that will pull things out, and everything
so
is...
If I do have some droppings, for instance, I could just vacuum them up with a shop vac, no problem.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Next Bye. Caller is in Crete, and this is line number 4, toll-free line. Hello.
Yeah, Hank, I got a second-floor bedroom. There's no attic above it. Along the line where the ceiling and the roof meet, the ceiling and the wall meet, within about a foot, there are 2 or 3 blotches of moisture. Then into the ceiling, about 2 feet from that connecting link between the ceiling and the wall, there's another line. This is a straight line almost of moisture, as opposed to the 3 or 4 blotches where the ceiling and the wall meet. The blotches are more of a straight line of moisture.
These appear during the wintertime?
Mostly.
Okay, I think you just have some insulation out of place, and you're actually getting some condensation there.
If we want to sell that building, somebody's going to come in like you and going to say, hey, man, you got to get this fixed, or you got to do something about this before you're going to sell it.
Well, you can always wash it. I think it'll wash off. But you can wash it or paint it, but basically we need some insulation because I think there is some insulation. The straight line would be the edge of a bat where the two bats did not come together, and the blotches where the insulation has been moved by something, people, animals, whatever, and this is what we call insulation shadowing, and it's not at all uncommon, but... you know, we can walk in and look up at the ceiling and basically tell by the color of the ceiling what kind of an insulation job there is.
Yeah, there's just those 2 spots. How do they fix that from the outside, I hope, because they don't go in through the ceiling inside, do they?
There's no attic space above us?
No, no attic.
It's very difficult to fix because outside you've got to take the roof off.
Just to get that one little spot?
Well, otherwise you may be able to drill a couple of small holes and run some foam into it. And small holes, you know, 1/4-3/8 inch are fairly easy to patch.
Yeah. So if we do paint over it and the guy comes in and takes the house over and he says, hey, a month, 2 months, a year later, say, look at that stuff out there. Why didn't they tell us about this shadowing stuff? We're in trouble, aren't we?
Well,
I mean, hiding it is just sort of like putting it off until the guy finds it and calls us up and say, hey, man, you sold us a rotten house here.
Well, if you inject the foam, you say, well, okay, I knew it. I tried to fix it, and without tearing off the roof or the ceiling, that's about as best we can do.
But if we do sell it and we have painted it over, we are obligated to tell the guy, aren't we?
Not necessarily.
Oh, okay. You're a guy after my own heart, Hank. Thanks a lot.
We have here about 20 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Hank Spies is here from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He is on the program once a month. It's always Monday. And we give you the chance to call in and ask questions about home maintenance. If you got a problem and you're just not quite sure how to deal with it, you can give us a call and talk with Hank, and he'll do his best to help you out. Here in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good to anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. We have talked on and off, I'm sure, in the past about painting now that we are in the summer season and maybe people are doing painting. I'm talking about outside painting,
yes.
Painting on the outside of the house. There's a couple of basic things that we have talked about, and maybe it wouldn't be such a bad idea to review those, particularly when it comes to the surface preparation, so that you do everything you can to get a good surface, because then if you go to all the trouble of painting it, you want the paint to stick there.
That's right. Basically, it's a matter of scrubbing it, letting it dry well, and then paint back over it. Now, if you have peeling paint, then you'd best figure out why it is peeling. Usually it's caused by moisture or by too many coats of paint. Once you've got a buildup of 25 thousandths of an inch, the paint's going to come off no matter what you do to it. So in that case, you end up having to scrape all the paint off, or else you cover it up with vinyl siding or something of that sort. If you do take the paint off down to bare wood, and then when you go to repaint, be sure that you touch sand it within an hour or so of the time you're going to put the primer on, because the ultraviolet in the sunlight will deteriorate the surface cells on the wood, and then the paint will stick to those and it may not hang on. Mm-hmm. So if we just very lightly touch sand it, then get the primer on, then it will make a tremendous difference in the life of the new coat of paint you put on.
Okay, so you're talking about using something like a palm sander.
Yeah.
And something. just give it a light.
I have a small, about 4-inch square electric palm sander I take up on the scaffold with me, zip, 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 and that's all it takes. We're taking off probably a couple of thousandths of an inch or something like that, but it makes a big difference on whether the paint stays on permanently or not, because the sunlight doesn't get a chance to deteriorate the surface.
So then do you need to follow that with something like a tack cloth to make sure that you're not leaving dust?
I don't know. I mean, I'm using a fine enough sandpaper, it doesn't make much difference.
Okay. All right. So if you're using fine enough paper, you're not going to leave some dust residue, then you're going to have that same problem.
Well, your coat of paint is going to mix with the paint, so we're not talking about that much. It isn't as though we've got a layer of sand or dust there. You're not talking about that much.
All right. Very good. Well, lines are full now. Let's go back to it. And we have several people in Champaign, and we'll start with line one. Hello. Line one. Hello. Go ahead.
Is that me?
Yes.
I'm considering buying one of those Lustron all-metal houses, and I was wondering what your general opinion of them is.
Well, it was an interesting house. Basically, the exterior and interior surfaces were porcelain enameled.
Yes.
You hang pictures with a magnet.
Yes.
There was not very much insulation in them to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And in many cases, particularly we're finding on the porcelain enamel steel shingles, that we're getting a lot of loss at the edges now.
Mm-hmm.
It's gotten old enough that the edges are all chipped and
yes.
so on. Is it still running on the original heating system?
I've never been in the house yet. I've only walked around it, and there's no gas meter, which indicates then that everything must be turned over to electricity. And so I guess it must have electric baseboard heating. That's my guess.
Most of those were originally done with gas furnaces hung from the ceiling.
Yeah, that's what I understand.
And that is not a great system. In other words, we're bringing in the heat high, and heat should be brought in low.
Right.
Undoubtedly, it does not have the one appliance that they were infamous for, because I think everyone has thrown them away. And that was, they had an appliance that was both a clothes washer and a dishwasher.
That's what I understand. I do have a couple of old, articles from the News Gazette about those houses.
That's interesting.
They mentioned that. I'm considering does have some corrosion up where the attic vents are. You know, those little series of vents.
Right.
Quite a bit of corrosion there. And maybe an auto body repairman would know how to fix that.
Yeah, basically you're going to have to buff that back to bare metal and repaint it.
Well, this has even gone beyond that. This is loose metal. And
you may have to sandblast it a little bit then or something.
And
it's a little Bondo.
Well, someone has tried to use some exterior brackets on it very crudely.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, part of it is just is loose. It's more than just buffing over. It somehow have to be stuck back together, but...
Well, if you check, there was an excellent article on Lustron houses in, I believe it was Fine Home Building a number of years ago, and I don't have the citation for it,
uh-huh.
I'm sorry, but discussed them quite thoroughly.
Uh-huh.
But there was an excellent thing, but the lack of insulation and the fact that we have all steel in there, we're bridging the insulation. We've got steel from inside to outside in the studs and things like this. It's not going to be easy to heat.
This particular house has had wood paneling applied over the interior walls.
Okay.
And it looks pretty nice, as I can tell, at least just from looking through the windows.
Right.
The house is
Well, that's definitely a plus.
Yeah, I thought so.
That's definitely a plus.
Let's see, what else was I going to say? Oh, is there any interference with radio or TV signals? Do you know?
Not that I know of.
I thought maybe with all that metal around there might be, but...
I've never tried it, honestly.
Yeah, I haven't heard anyone complain about that, so...
Yeah, usually we get enough through the windows. It's not a major problem.
Yeah, right. I live alone, so the size of the house would be okay for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I was considering it.
Yeah, there's, I don't know, 12 or 15 restaurants here in town.
Yeah, this particular house was used as a rental house for quite a while, and
mm-hmm.
it has suffered accordingly on the outside. But as I say, I don't know about the inside yet. But it must be all electric, because, as I say, the gas meter's gone.
Yeah, well, as I say, originally they were gas heated.
Yeah, that's what I thought, yeah.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you. Let's go on here. We've got another Champagne caller. This is line number two. Hello.
Oh, hello.
Yes.
Another paint and, I guess, a siding question. So I have a house and detached garage, both with wooden siding and both painted about, I think, 6 years ago. And the paint on the house is doing great, and the paint on the garage is peeling like mad. It's, you were talking about moisture.
Yes.
The siding is just... there's just a single layer of siding that's nailed over the frame. Is that sort of a normal way to do a garage? And should I expect
it to probably would be a normal way of doing a garage, but basically we are getting moisture from the garage, which happens significantly. When wintertime, we get snow and ice and crud on the bottom of the car, and you pull in the garage and it melts off, and that sort of thing. So you probably could reduce the chances of that occurring by putting up some type of an interior surfacing with a layer of visqueen behind it so that we didn't get moisture into the wall.
Interior surfacing like drywall or something?
Could be drywall, paneling, whatever you can hang stuff on. This is the stuff you store in the garage.
Okay.
But if you run a sheet of visqueen over the whole thing, that will help significantly.
Okay, that's good. And could I ask, too, about alternatives to siding? I don't really want to, but some of the siding certainly needs replacement. I don't really want to use vinyl, but I'm wondering what else is suitable in this climate.
Well, there's nothing wrong with wood. Replacing it with wood is fine.
Okay.
We've also had pretty good luck with the new fiber cement sidings. And
okay.
They pretty much look like wood, but are considerably more durable.
Would I just sort of ask anybody who's doing contracting about?
The probably the most prevalent brand is Hardy Plank.
Okay.
There's a couple of other brands also. Certain Teed also makes one. And
okay, good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. And we continue. The next caller is also in Champaign. This is line three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Is that me?
Yes.
Oh, thank you very much for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
My question concerns air conditioning. We have four air conditioners in the house. It was built in the mid-1960s, and it's about 2,800 square feet. Now, the problem is that when the temperature is such that the air conditioners just stop working because they've reached the temperature that is indicated on the thermostat, then, and if it rains outside or if it is very humid, the parts of the house smell. And those are the parts that have ceilings over it. The middle of the house have cathedral ceiling, and it's just, you know, just a roof, but no attic.
Mm-hmm.
But the parts, the two parts of the house that have attics, they have this musty smell. Because, you know, there is no the air conditioner, neither the air conditioner nor the heater works. What should we do?
Well, first thing, let's be sure that you have some ventilation for that attic.
Mm-hmm.
There should be some airflow through the attic above the insulation.
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, you might want to consider using a dehumidifier.
Ah, inside the house?
Inside the house.
Uh-huh. I see.
And it doesn't make any difference where it is. You can set it so that it drains into a sink or a laundry drain or something like that, because no matter where it is, it dehumidifies the whole house.
Uh-huh. I see. Uh-huh. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Yes, well. Yes. Any other ideas? Because somebody told us last year to have the ducts cleaned, and we had that done, but it didn't help. I mean, now
it seldom does.
But then it didn't.
It seldom does.
Yeah.
Okay. No. Basically, it's a matter of controlling the humidity, and if your air conditioners aren't running enough to do that, a dehumidifier will make a significant difference.
What size of it do we need for a house of this size?
You're going to need a pretty good sized one. I don't know what the size range are that's available in the brands that you're looking at.
But, any special brand that you would recommend?
No, not really. They all work the same.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you for the call.
Bye-bye.
And let's go to then we have some people in Chicago. Line number 4 in Chicago. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
On modern air conditioners, they are supposed to be more efficient than the older ones on room and window air conditioners. How can you tell when you've got the new modern one?
Okay, on a window or room air conditioner, you should be getting an SEER of about 9.
9. Is that stamped on the machine?
It should be on the label on the machine.
Right.
It won't be stamped on, but it certainly should be on the label that it comes on.
If the number is below or above, which is the...
The bigger, the better.
The bigger, the better. Uh-huh.
Right. And a lot of the old ones were 5 and 6.
I see. What did they do to change that?
We completely changed the mechanics of them. Essentially, in the last 10 years, we have doubled the efficiency of air conditioners.
So the air conditioner, if it's like 12 years old, it's a goner then.
You would probably the best thing you do with it is throw it away.
I see. One more question on our new bathtubs, sinks, and toilets. They have a nice glaze to them, and over time, Comet will remove that. Is there any other cleaner that will keep the glaze on there?
Well, you should never use anything abrasive like Comet.
Abrasive.
Basically, anything that you would use to clean another smooth surface, a counter surface or something like that, if you have the new fiberglass tubs, use the material that they say for cleaning fiberglass boats. It's the same stuff.
But on the, otherwise, over the supermarket, what would be? Would you recommend one?
Let's put it this way. If you can squirt it out of a trigger sprayer, fine. If you can't, it's too abrasive.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. To Chicago again. Line number 1. Hello.
Hello, Chicago.
Yes.
Regarding replacing things, we have a hot water heater that's about 20-25 years old, and suddenly it tapped out the other day, didn't produce any hot water. And they called people in, and they restarted it, and they left, and some gas is leaking, so the people in the building shut it off. And new people came in and looked at it, and they just decided it needed more servicing, replacing of some of the integral mechanisms or parts of it. And they left, and they still didn't get the hot water functioning. In fact, when they put the things back together, some of the things are leaking. I'm wondering for all the fuss and trouble it's going to, and they still haven't gotten any results, if a 20-25-year-old hot water heater should be replaced at this time.
I certainly would.
Yeah. One more question about, you heard of the Rinnai water heater. It's being advertised quite a bit. It's like the size of a suitcase, they say, that produces hot water on demand. Have you heard anything favorable about it?
Nothing particularly unfavorable. They seem to work fairly well as long as you're not using too much water or that the incoming water isn't too cold.
Uh-huh.
Because you're limited as to how much you can raise the temperature as it goes through.
Well, like for a 9 or 10 unit condo, I don't know if you need more than one or two, or maybe that would...
If you're doing for the whole building, you're going to need something substantially bigger.
Like the 50-gallon type of hot water heater.
Well, and you want to look not at the gallon, look at the BTUs of the burner.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. All right, well, I'll try to get one more here, and that's Champagne, line 2. Hello.
Hi, I've knocked some holes in my vinyl siding with my string trimmer. Is there a way to patch it?
Not really.
Okay.
That wasn't the answer you were looking for, was it?
No, but I was hoping. I remember some fiberglass material that my uncle used to use. It was, you start off with a cloth and then you coat it with resin and it would harden, but I guess maybe that's not available anymore.
It's still available, but I'm not sure it sticks to vinyl very well.
I get it.
And probably the best thing to do is a siding contractor has a little tool called a siding zipper that will unlock the piece and you can replace it.
Right. Oh, thanks, man.
All right. Well, thank you for the call. And with that, I guess we're about ready to finish up. Anything, last little thing you'd like to mention to folks?
No, I think we've pretty well covered the gamut here.
Okay. So on your air conditioning, make sure your filters are clean. Make sure that there's nothing on the outside unit that's choking it up so it will be working properly.
Yeah, I think the fuzz from cottonwood trees is one of the prime offenders in that.
Make sure your gutters are clean, your downspouts are connected. They're going at least at least 6 feet away
from
the
Well, 3 feet for crawl spaces, 10 feet for basements.
All right.
And then, of course, we want to be sure that all of your drainage is away and this kind of thing.
All right, very good. Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Hank Spies from the Spies Home Inspection Service. He's with us every month here on the program. It's always on the third Monday in the 10 o'clock hour to answer these questions. Our programs here are made possible in part with support from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors. We thank them for their support of Focus 580. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors offers pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors is pleased to support public radio in Central Illinois on behalf of its customers and business associates. Coming up a little bit later today on the Afternoon Magazine, come August, birds that have summered in the Arctic will begin their long migration south. They'll leave their breeding areas for their wintering areas. On the Afternoon Magazine today, Celeste Quinn will be talking with a biologist about this migration. His name is Stephen Brown, and he'll be joining Celeste following the 1 o'clock news. The program itself gets underway at noon with the usual mix of news and weather and sports. That's right here on AM 580. Celeste Quinn is the host for the program. Coming up in our next hour, we'll be talking with travel writer Jeffrey Taylor. He's been various places around the world, but none of the trips he made compared in terms of how tough it was and how far it was to his travels through Siberia along the region's most remote river. In the next hour, he'll be talking with us about his book, River of No Reprieve. It is the story about that trip. He'll be joining us by telephone from Moscow. So stay with us for that right now.